I'd like to call this Board of Supervisor meeting to order. The date is October 17th. The time is 6:32. I'm going to ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm going to ask Judge McFadden if she would lead us in the pledge, and then I would also ask you to remain standing for a moment of silence for former Stanislaus County Supervisor Nick Blum and Department of Child Support Services employee Darlene Avila, and then there will be an invocation by Cindy Marks of the City Ministry Networks.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Supervisor. Our Heavenly Father, I thank you for your goodness to us. I lift up those who have passed before us, ask you to bless their families, give them grace and peace and comfort at this time. I pray now for our supervisors, and I pray that you will bless them, that you would give them wisdom and knowledge to make wise decisions that affect our county and the families that live here. I thank you for all that they have done and all that they're going to do, and how you will reign one day and bless us in a mighty way. Thank you, Lord, for them. Thank you for all that have attended here today. I pray you would also have a great blessing upon them, the time that they're spent to come here, and bless the staff and all those that work for the county to be able to make this a peaceful and good place to live. In the name of our Lord, amen.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Judge. Looks like we have a pretty packed agenda today, and so I'll try and keep it moving. First up, item 5 is a presentation proclaiming October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Judge McFadden will be presenting. And thank you, by the way, Judge, for me not telling you that ahead of time, for hitting it on the fly without even missing a beat. Appreciate it.
Supervisors, thank you for allowing me to be here tonight. I know you have a number of items on your agenda, and I thank you for proclaiming October to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Your recognition of the problem that everyone continues to face helps build the awareness of our community, and through awareness we can solve the problem. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And if we could get you to come over this way, Supervisor Monteith will be presenting.
It's my pleasure to present to you this certificate in recognition of proclaiming October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. Now, normally I don't read these out, but I'm going to tonight because there's so much in here that's so important for people to realize. I doubt if most people realize the domestic violence and abuse in this county. It is extremely, it's real. It's here, and it needs to be addressed. And I'd like to say this. It says, domestic violence affects people of all ages, racial, social, economic, educational, religion, occupation segments of our society, and especially children. Whereas in 1996, under the Senate concurrent resolution number 17, the state of California declared the month of October as Domestic Violence Aware Month. And whereas Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors approved the formation of the Domestic Violence Coordinating Council on August 29th of 1995. Whereas it is the mission of the Family Domestic Violence Coordinating Council to reduce the incidence of domestic violence and abuse in Stanislaus County through effective coordinating among agencies, departments, existing services, and courts for individuals affected by domestic violence and abuse, and through the prevention, intervention, and treatment techniques accomplished through education, research, and data collection. Whereas the Domestic Violence Coordinating Council will co-sponsor a day-long conference on offender, quote, accountable, supervising these victims by intimate partner violence, understanding and interviewing the traumatization victims, and caring for yourself, unquote, on November 3rd, 2017 at the Peterson Event Center to encourage and to promote public education and community awareness. So as of now, we are designating October 2017 as Domestic Violence Aware Month. Further, we commend the Domestic Violence Coordinating Council and other dedicated professionals who work to reduce the incidence of domestic violence and abuse in Stanislaus County and to educate the community on the seriousness of domestic violence. This is one of the things we need to stamp out, and it happens all day. You probably will be amazed, but you probably know someone is going through this situation. And whenever you see it, you should make people aware so they can be treated, because there is a solution. But if you ignore it, it goes on and on and on, and it gains momentum. So I request everyone here tonight, recognizing the month of October, but if you see any signs, please step forward, because there are agencies, there are groups that are willing to step up and help those who are going through this violence and abuse. And on behalf, thank you very much for the certificate. And if you wish to say a few more words, here's the opportunity.
Thank you, Supervisor Monteith. You've been an instrumental part of our council, and the board has been very supportive of our council throughout the years, and I really appreciate that as a member of this community. We have people here who are willing to help. We have the Family Justice Center, the person in charge of that, Carol Shipley, is here tonight, and also from Haven, May Rico. And as Supervisor Monty said, in this country, the Center for Disease Control estimated that $8.3 billion per year is spent on domestic violence incidents, traumatization of the victims, lost income, loss opportunities for people. So your support in helping make people aware of the problem is the first step in really eradicating the problem of domestic violence. I've seen it as a judge over and over again how it really affects our community. And so anything we can do to make people aware and to educate people and to help the victims and the offenders will help our community greatly. So thank you again for your support.
Okay, now we'll move on to item six, which is the public comment period. It's an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item that is not on today's posted agenda. I would ask that you keep your comments to 5 minutes or less when addressing the board. California state law does not allow us to take any action on anything that comes out of the public comment unless it is on the posted agenda. If you can, I do have one speaker card here. It's Antonia Kinslow. If we're going to have a bunch of speakers, if you could fill out, come on up, Antonia. It always makes the process go a little faster if you do it, but you don't have to.
Okay. I believe I'm building one speaker. Yes, no?
Maybe not. Right. We'll see.
Thank you so much. I spoke years ago for the first time. I was so nervous, and again, I'm so nervous, but where I spoke was that it was necessary as an employee for, it's January will be 17 years with Health Services Agency. And we were advocating to get back that 6% that was taken, and that did come back to us. But I now, and I don't think I'm alone in this, I'm a single mother, and as an employee with HSA for 17 years, I, as a single mother, cannot go out and rent a two-bedroom apartment. The people I have served, and mind you, maybe this is just me as a person, warm and fuzzy, and when a woman went to San Francisco State and thought, I want to be a county worker someday, I want to serve the underserved, it was noble, it was good. And I know it's a whole other subject, but there are people who abuse the system. But we see it every day. Women who get to be with their children, five children in tow, get into an Escalade, and it's just, I can personally say I'm feeling jaded. I never wanted to feel this. And I think it's time, if we really want to live by the principles that you've set by this county, then do right by your people. And we should be able to go out and rent. We don't, it's a gray area. We don't qualify for Section 8, but we also can't go out and spend $1,300 for a decent apartment. And I, as a single mother, I'm certainly not going to take my boys and go to West Modesto where they can't even go out and ride their skateboards up front. It doesn't get more real than this, and it's just time. It's something to truly look at and evaluate. I love my job. I put my heart into it. And I don't like the fact that I feel jaded. And I'm sure I'm not alone in this feeling. I'm sure there are many people who feel the same. Perhaps if I was a single mom and had my ex was somebody who made great money and I received great amount of child support, but I am going to share this with you. June 15th, when I got the final judgment, Judge Ellen Cassidy said, you are to pay half of all medical, dental, daycare, and $50 a month. My jaw dropped where the lawyers were sitting off of the side. I saw jaws drop. I never thought in a million years people pay more for dog food. So that is just not okay. I think, why is it that I started out in 2001 at 1083. It is now 2017. I make less than 18 an hour. And I believe I'm worth it. I believe so many of my coworkers are worth so much more than we are paid. And I ask that you please give serious consideration to that. Thank you.
And Tony, you do a good job. Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Opportunity to speak on anything that's not on today's posted agenda? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to do the consent calendar first, and then we'll go back to the public hearings, the 6:35. We did have one request to pull C1. Do you just need comment?
No, I'd actually like a brief staff presentation just to explain what the new routes will be and the purpose of the change.
Okay, so I'm going to call up Matt Machado, item C1, speak on it. And we'll take the calendar together, if that's okay. So first, explain what C1 is.
Absolutely. Well, good evening, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doring, Matt Machado, your Public Works Director. And the C1 item before you is proposed to restrict trucks on Finney Road in Salida. This is a residential area. Finney Road leads into the downtown area of Salida. It connects to Broadway, which also then connects to State Route 99. And we believe what happened here and the reason for this need today is that during the Pellendale Interchange project, construction project, we had to close the railroad crossing. I'll show you a graphic here in just a second. Well, maybe I'll pull it up right now, see if we can get there. And so the graphic's not really great because I just drafted it, but it'll get us there. The interchange project at Pellendale was right here. There was a railroad crossing that we had to close during construction due to conflicts with staging. And when we did that, in essence, it routed all the trucks that used to use Dakota and Salida Boulevard, it routed them onto Finney Road, which is, this is Finney, and this is Broadway. And so it routed those trucks here. These are large semis, large trucks, pass-through trucks, a lot of them. And then even though we opened this back up this past summer, we still haven't seen much of these trucks come back to the old way. And so as much as we've tried to encourage them, it just habit has been formed. And what I'd like to point out is that this new route that they're using, this Finney route, is about 3 miles long. The old route, which is Dakota to Salida Boulevard, is actually less, 2.2 miles. getting to the interchange at Kiernan. So we believe that if we could just create this habit for the trucks again, everybody would be happy, including the residents. Get the pointer back here. The residents in this area. The residents in this area are frustrated with all the truck traffic. We're running about 800 semis a day down this residential area. And so this is a critical issue. We believe it's a safety issue. And so this is the item we bring for you today.
Thank you, Matt. It's amazing the power of an illustration. As soon as I saw this map that you created an hour or so ago, I felt much better, but still felt it was important to present. I figured if I had concerns about suddenly 800 trucks being diverted, others would too. But I think once you see this map, it's a very small section of Finney, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So thanks for the presentation on such short notice.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you. Any other comments on this? Okay. Would any other items like to be pulled? Is there any comment from the audience on any item that is on today's consent agenda marked with an asterisk? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a motion.
To approve.
We have a motion.
We'll second that.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Being past the time of 6:35, we are going to, or 6:40. It's 6:40. Yes, it is. The public hearing to consider the Planning Commission's recommendation of approval of the ordinance amendment application PL 2017-0055, small livestock farming, and an update on the zoning ordinance. Angela Freitas will be presenting.
Good evening, Chairman Chiesa, members of the board, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doring. I'm Angela Freitas, the County Planning Director. With me this evening to assist in presenting the Small Livestock Farming Ordinance Amendment is Denzel Henderson.
Can I take a liberty for 1 second? I've got to announce the cancellation of the 6:35.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry.
Very much. I just want to make sure that if anybody was in the audience that you noticed on the agenda that we have postponed the public hearing, which was originally scheduled for 6:35. Which was to consider the adoption of a revised county public facility fee impact fee and related matters. We have another item that was just approved during the consent calendar to postpone that. And if you would like any further information, please just contact us and we'll let you know. It should come back to the board in the next few months. Thank you.
Okay. Angela, thank you.
Good evening again. For those who may not have heard the introduction, I'm Angela Freitas, the county's planning director. With me this evening to assist in presenting the project is Assistant Planner Denzel Henderson. We're presenting the Planning Commission's recommendation on proposed ordinance amendment addressing small livestock farming. The purpose of the ordinance amendment before you this evening is to provide clarification of the small livestock farming definition. The definition sets the baseline for establishing the quantity of small livestock permitted to be kept in all residential zoning districts and in the A2 general agricultural zoning district with an urban transition designation. The definition of small livestock farming covers chicken hens, turkeys, pigeons, rabbits, and similar fowl and animals, permanent standard beehives, and roosters, quacking ducks, geese, guinea fowl, peafowl, worms, and similar livestock. The clarification provided by the ordinance amendment is focused on the third group of animals, specifically roosters, which are known to have nuisance characteristics that are not compatible in residential zoned areas or areas with higher residential density. The development of this ordinance amendment included consideration of a countywide rooster regulation as a means to deter illegal rooster fighting. During review of the rooster regulation, poultry breeders raised concerns with the impact regulations could have on their ability to continue to raise and breed poultry. In response to the concerns raised, staff conducted further analysis of rooster complaints received by the county as a means of identifying impacted zoning districts. Based on that further analysis, a countywide rooster regulation has not been pursued and is not included in the ordinance amendment before you this evening. The analysis of rooster complaints looked at complaints received between January 1, 2014 and June 22 of 2017. During that time period, there were 157 rooster complaints, 103 of those being unduplicated, meaning they were on different parcels, separate different parcels. 67% of the complaints came from the R1, R2, R3, single, medium density, and medium family residential zoning districts. 16% came from the RA Rural Residential Zoning District, 10 came from locations that were within cities, and only 7 came from the A2 General Agricultural Zoning District. This map illustrates the location of the rooster complaints received during the review period, with complaint locations reflected as red dots. The dots reflect a concentration in residential zoning districts located in the community of Salida and within the LAFCO adopted spheres of influence of the cities of Modesto and Ceres. The next series of maps are intended to better highlight the location of the residential zoning districts in the A2 urban transition areas where the small livestock farming definition is applicable. This first map reflects the entire of the county's A2 General Agricultural Zoning District, which is made up of approximately 18,400 parcels. Also reflected on this map are the LAFCO adopted spheres of influence of the 9 cities. The proposed ordinance amendment does not affect the vast majority of the A2 zoning district. The ordinance amendment before you this evening is only applicable to the A2 zone parcels with an urban transition designation. These are the areas, the small areas, reflected on this map in green. These A2 urban transition areas are concentrated within the LAFCO adopted spheres of influence of the 9 cities and the unincorporated communities of Dener and Keys. This next map reflects all of those A2 urban transition areas, those areas in green, along with the residentially zoned parcels, which are reflected in a yellowish tone. Residentially zoned parcels include those parcels located within LAFCO adopted spheres of influence of the cities of Modesto, Ceres, Turlock, and Riverbank, and the unincorporated communities of Crow's Landing, Wesley, Grayson, Salida, Keys, Dener del Rio, Empire, and East Oakdale. As reflected in Attachment 5 of your Board of Supervisors report, the ordinance amendment before you this evening makes no changes to the number of chicken, hens, turkeys, pigeons, rabbits, or similar fowl or animals that are permitted in the R1, R2, R3, or RA zoning district, and makes no change to the number of beehives that are permitted. This ordinance only clarifies that no roosters, quacking ducks, geese, guinea fowl, peafowl, worms, or similar livestock or other nuisance type animals are not permitted within a residential zoning district. Without the proposed clarification to the small livestock farming definition before you this evening, the definition could be interpreted to restrict an 8,000 square foot residential lot that is such as those that are commonly found in the communities of Salida, Keys, and Dener to a maximum of 12 chicken or rabbit, while allowing for an unlimited number of roosters to be kept. Staff does not believe that this was the intent of the definition, and it has not been the historical interpretation to allow for an unlimited number of roosters on residentially zoned parcels. In the agricultural zone, the ordinance amendment has no impact on the number of animals allowed in the A2 urban transition, except again to clarify the restriction on roosters and other nuisance type animals. In the A2 zoning district outside the urban transition area, the proposed ordinance amendment makes no change. There are no restrictions on the number of small livestock permitted. The agricultural uses permitted within the A2 zoning district outside the urban transition area is broader than the small livestock farming definition. The next few slides will address the specific amendments considered by the Planning Commission. The definition to small livestock farming is amended to clarify that the number of animals permitted is a combined total of individual animals and not animal types, to clarify which animals are not allowed to be kept in any quantity, including any other small domestic animal determined by the planning director to have the potential to cause a nuisance. The RA zoning district is amended to remove the exclusion of turkeys, to add pens, coops, cages, or similar housing to the existing setback for buildings used for the keeping of animals, to clarify that the setback from public streets is to be measured from the edge of pavement, and to delete the setback requirement for on-site buildings used for human occupancy. The nonconforming uses chapter is amended to clarify that the keeping of animals is in quantities greater than permitted shall not be subject to continuation as a nonconforming use. As reflected in Recommendation 5 before you this evening, staff is requesting approval of the ordinance amendment as recommended by the Planning Commission, but with 2 exclusions. To exclude pens, coops, cages, and similar housing used from the RA zoning district, and to exclude except for commercial dairy, poultry, and hog operations from the nonconforming use chapter. The reasons for these recommendations are that on smaller parcels, The setback for pens and coops could limit housing types despite the allowance for keeping certain types of animals, and the use of the word commercial as applied to the nonconforming uses section could cause confusion since the term itself is not defined. The ordinance amendment proposed for adoption includes a grace period provision for enforcement. The enforcement grace period specifies that enforcement shall not commence until 6 months following the effective date of the ordinance, which will be November 16, 2017, if approved this evening. An additional time to comply, not to exceed 6 months, may be granted by the Planning Commission upon application showing good cause. Those who have spoken and written in support of the ordinance have cited issues of concern focused on rooster noise, safety concerns associated with illegal rooster fighting activities occurring in the neighborhood, inhumane treatment of roosters, and the impact the keeping of roosters has on the quality of life of surrounding neighbors. Those who have spoken and written in opposition to the ordinance have cited issues of concern focused on the belief that the ordinance amendment is unconstitutional and is infringing on property rights. The roosters are a small number of the complaints received by the county and as such are not an issue needing to be addressed. A belief that the county can use its right to farm policy and noise standards to address rooster complaints, concern with setbacks being a taking, and concern that the ordinance amendment grants the planning director total power to determine which animals are nuisances and as such not allowed to be kept. While staff disagrees with the points of opposition, including setbacks being a taking, we are recommending a modification to the setback amendment as discussed earlier in this presentation. The proposed ordinance amendment again does not apply any new restrictions on the number of small livestock permitted to be kept, but rather provides clarification based on the county's historical interpretation that roosters and other nuisance type animals not be allowed in residential zoning districts in the A2 urban transition. Without this ordinance amendment, the keeping of an unlimited number of roosters and other nuisance type animals could be interpreted to be permitted. The Planning Commission, on a 7-0 vote, has recommended approval of the proposed ordinance amendment. Staff is recommending approval of this ordinance amendment as recommended by the Planning Commission with the exclusion of certain amendments addressing setbacks of housing types and nonconforming provisions for commercial operations. Staff's recommendation this evening is as outlined in recommendations 1 through 6 of the board report. If there are any questions, staff is available to address them.
You talk really fast. So I know that if we can go back like probably 4 slides where we talked about the non-conforming use, just so that everyone can understand, I think it's about 4 slides back. Okay. You put this in layman's terms. I need you to simplify it for everyone, including myself.
So if somebody today had a parcel of less than an acre that had 6 roosters on it and they were permitted to have 0 roosters, this would basically be saying that the keeping of animals would not allow the grandfathering of the property for them to continue to have the roosters on the property.
Okay. And on the original map, when we had you had the little dots, the areas, I want to go back to that, probably maybe the 3rd slide. Let's see, not that one, the one before that has the complaints on it. It's populated before. I'm sorry, I don't have the hand aside.
The rooster complaint map was the first map. If it's one of the...
Well, there was one that, it was in the very beginning when they added the colors with each slide.
With the green and the yellow?
Yeah. Okay, so you start there, and then your next one has the adding the colors. So the sphere of influence versus the urban transition, are any of those different? There we go. Now we're getting there.
The urban transition designation was a designation that was applied before LAFCO adopted spheres of influence. It essentially kind of served the purpose of a sphere of influence from the county's perspective in recognizing that the area would transition and would develop based on the city's general plan. When LAFCO adopted spheres of influence, the county stopped designating land urban transition. So the urban transition area, while it primarily is located within spheres of influence, there are areas within spheres of influence that are not designated urban transition. And then the urban transition designation is also used in smaller communities like Dener and Keys, where we anticipate growth to occur within the community plan area.
Okay, but it looks like only down in Dener is there urban transition outside of the sphere of influence. I don't see it anywhere else, maybe in Keys.
Keys has a little bit and Dener has some, and it's tied to their community plans.
Okay, so we're adding the green to the no-go. This is the portion, right?
Correct.
So everyone can see.
We're clarifying that within those areas.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So are there any questions of staff? I just wanted to point out a few things, please.
The only question I have right now is if you could further explain the setback. What are the setback requirements? And are they the same for the A2 urban transition as they are for the residential zones?
The RA Rural Residential Zoning District has its own set of setbacks specific to buildings for the keeping of livestock. You don't find that in any of the other zoning districts. Right now, it is the buildings for the keeping of livestock or poultry shall not be less than 50 feet from any public street, nor less than 40 feet from any window or door of any building used for human occupancy or any adjacent property. We were asking to add pens, coops, cages, and similar housing types because not all buildings are structures. So cages wouldn't and pens wouldn't have been included there. Making a clarification that the measurement of the 50 feet is from edge of pavement because there was no defining mark from the public street. And then actually loosening the setback by removing the 40-foot requirement for any windows or doors on any building used for human occupancy. But what that does create is if you take the community of Dener, where we have a lot of rural residential zoned parcels, you could have a smaller lot, an 8,000 square foot lot as a common lot, where they are permitted to have up to 12 chickens or 12 rabbits, and they want to have a pen or a cage, and that would be restrictive.
Meaning they wouldn't they can't meet the setback requirement?
Correct. They would not be able to meet the setback requirements. So we're asking that be pulled. If they were to build a building, something that would require a building permit, something substantial, they would still have to meet the setback. But if you have somebody with some rabbits, that is totally fine. They can have the rabbits, and they want to have a pen or a cage for those rabbits. We want to be able to let them have a pen or a cage.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure. So virtually everyone should be able to have their 12 chickens, 12 rabbits, what
yes,
have you.
And we don't want to exclude being able to have some place to put them.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, this will be the opportunity for everyone in the audience to participate. Come up and comment. Keep your comments to 5 minutes or less. You have a little light up there, green, yellow means 30 seconds, and red means stop. So come on up. Someone wants to talk. Here we go.
I'm Loretta, and I live in the city of Modesto, so I have a question to ask you guys. Mm-hmm. Why are people growling like mad out in the country? When you're in the city, we can keep chicken, cats, dogs, and all that. And our lots are maybe 50 by 100 or 50 by 140. Why is this done? This makes no sense at all. And if a person hasn't lived there very long, why are they growling at these people that try and do this? Can you tell me why?
Okay, does chickens, cats, or dogs have any
You can have chickens, you can have cats, you can have dogs. We actually did an analysis with the 9 cities within the county. It was included in the Planning Commission staff report. And what we are proposing are very, what we have, because those limitations already exist, is very consistent with what the cities have and their requirements. If you're in the city of Modesto, you can have 12 chickens. If you're in unincorporated county residential, you can have 12 chickens.
Yeah. It's roosters. It's maybe we could pull that slide back up one more time. Of what is not permitted?
City of Modesto does not permit roosters. They do not permit the quacking ducks, the geese, the guinea fowl, the peafowl, or the worms. So they have the same restrictions that we do, as do the other 9 cities, with the exception of Turlock, which does allow for up to 6 domestic fowl. So they do allow for the quacking ducks, geese, guinea fowl, and peafowl. But other than that, with the nuisance type animals that we're clarifying that they are restricted, we are the same as the 9 cities.
Since when hasn't the city of Modesto been able to raise roosters?
I can't speak to when the city...
Because we have some roosters over right over by Grisada Park. Mm. So if we've got them here...
I'll give you their number.
And they're out in the county raising cane about it, I want to know why. This makes no sense because these guys out in the country have been there a long time. A lot of them have.
We are not restricting the keeping of roosters out in the general agricultural zoning district except in those limited areas that are close into the cities.
What about dogs then and cats having license?
The county permits dogs and cats, I believe, up to 4 dogs per parcel.
And they have to have license,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do. Yes.
And if they do not, what do the people do?
I can't speak for Animal Services.
No, can't speak for Animal
Services. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Be shy.
I would like to protest rezoning of everything. It's already zoned the way it is now. Like me, I've lived where I live now for 30 years. I was born 4 parcels away from where I live, and nobody told me I couldn't have what I wanted on my property. I live out in the country, is why I moved out there, so I could have roosters and things. People that lives in town that don't like it should go out and try to buy a piece of this property in Stanislaus County. It's not free. It costs a lot of money and the time and energy, and it don't hurt society in any way that I know of. It contributes to it, really. People that buy the land, they buy the feed, they don't pay taxes. I don't even know this lady sitting here telling me what's good for me and my property. What's the agenda to you? What's it to you?
Please address the board.
Just and what's your the law?
Could you state your name for the record? You forgot.
Well, I want to protest it.
Could you
There's
state
no
your name for the record?
There's already laws and things on the books right now.
Excuse me. Could you state your name for the record?
Benny Hodges.
Okay. Thank you, Benny. Keep going.
The train's already left. What's, you know? There's a lot of people's lives at stake here. There's 500,000 people lives in Stanislaus County. And I doubt if there's 200 of them even know about you trying to pass the laws on the roosters. I don't know.
Do you live in one of the urban transition areas?
Yes.
You do?
I guess I live out on Taylor Road. It's rural. I got 2 acres.
Taylor Road in Denair?
Now they're coming up with these setback laws, 40 foot on each side of me and 40 foot up the back. That don't leave very much of an acre. Nobody never told me that in the last 30 years that I know of. I've never had nobody sign a complaint on me for anything. All my neighbors like me. I don't see the point to this. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Danny.
Very hard to get up here and talk. Barely graduated high school because of this, but I feel that... telling someone what they can do, and I understand you guys. When I stood up here and we all got here, we did the Pledge of Allegiance. Do you guys realize that sometime in probably your kids' future, there's going to be someone in this courtroom telling you that your kids can't do that. And here's what I don't understand. There's someone whose agenda is behind. People put money up to get these agendas to chase rooster guys and this. I was raised up in Oregon. I moved here. I started a family. I worked my butt off to move to the country so we could raise animals, so we could do the things that we want. My sons are into FFA. We raise poultry. We take bannies. We take our livestock to the fairs to do all these things. We bought where we bought because I'm not rich. You can't afford a $1 million place out in Oakdale or outside Ceres to buy. So where I bought is right to where I'm going to be in that sphere of influence. I'm going to be the next phase of the city taking over. And now I can't have my chickens, and I can't have, and I do raise roosters. I have about 50 of them, okay? If you go to the roosters, fighting roosters is illegal. If you guys are chasing that, put them in jail. Do something about the ones that are fighting the roosters. Don't try to get rid of the ones. Run my record. My name is Michael Graham. I haven't complained. You asked him. You don't know who I am. This is my first time because I just heard about this. We raise roosters. My kids, masters of education. No one's been in trouble. I don't have an arrest record. But you guys, not you guys, but society in general is portraying me because someone else raises roosters and they're criminal. I shouldn't get charged for it. I don't commit a crime. I know plenty of guys that raise roosters that aren't criminals. I'm getting treated like them because they do. It's not right. Are you a criminal because you believe in God? At one point in this country, it's going to be. Someone has to stand up somewhere. Someone's right to own things, to do things. I moved to the country so I didn't bother no one. I don't try to move in town, and now because I'm going to be annexed in the city, I'm going to have to not be able to do what me and my kids have been doing for 15 years. It's not right.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Graham. May I ask you to state your name and up front?
Connie Ghosh, and thank you, Connie. I am for the new amendment. We live in RA area, and we are like, our homes are just like in town. We might be an acre, but we're side-by-side homes. And down the street is hundreds of roosters, here, 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 and here. Well, let me tell you, there is so many times that I would like to open my windows and sleep with the air coming in. Instead, I have to close it up, turn the air conditioner on, because roosters can start at 2 in the morning, and then they start feeding off of each other, and it is noisy. February 7th of 2016, we had a cockfighting bust on our road, and we had people running through our yards, jumping in our fences, hiding from the police, and everything that it brings to the community. And now we are maybe out in the edge of the country, but we are residential. We have homes side by side. And it gets so noisy sometimes, you can't even hear yourself think. We're concerned for our safety, the kind of people it brings into the neighborhood, and all they're changing is the RA, and I think that's a good thing. If you want to have hundreds of roosters, go farther out when you're not bothering your neighbors, and there's a lot of them there. So, with that being said, thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Ghosh. Anyone else?
Hi, my name is John Harless. I'm the president of the California Association for the Preservation of Gamefowl. I have already submitted to each of you my arguments against the amendment, and I'm assuming you've done your due diligence and you've studied the issues. But I won't bore you with going over it all again, but I would like to summarize it. First off, it's been a lot of said about transitional area being affected. I don't see it in this. It does not say transitional area or just RA. This says small livestock farming. So you can talk all you want, but it's in black and white. That's what counts. I'd like to say that when someone buys residential property, they do that with certain hopes, needs, and expectations. When somebody buys property in an agricultural area, they're also expecting certain things, certain needs of theirs need to be satisfied. So now if a person who lives in a residential area, and believe me, I believe if you live in a residential area, you shouldn't have crow and roosters because people who buy residential property expect it to be residential, not farm area. But contrary to that, if you buy land in an agricultural area, per the right to farm ordinance, you're advised what to expect. So now if a person in a residential area comes to the city or the county and says, you know what, I'd like to raise some hogs, geese, and chickens on my property. I'd like the city council or the board of supervisors to change the code so I can do that. Well, we'd just summarily write that person off as a kook. But if somebody lives in an agricultural area and they come to the county and say, you know what, this guy next door to me has hogs, chickens, and geese, and it's irritating me. I'd like you to change the amendment so he can't exercise his rights to agricultural activities on his property. Well, that's taken seriously for some reason. So here we are. That's why we're here tonight, because people in agricultural areas are complaining about agricultural activity. So the county has a right to farm ordinance, which has provisions in it to handle grievances. And I spoke with Connie, and she said the county has not helped her on her grievance. So I don't know why we're going to do all these efforts when the remedy is already in effect and hasn't been exercised. Also, California civil codes that define a nuisance and restrict declaring a farming operation a nuisance because of urbanization of the area. So these transitional areas, they're just caught up in that predicament. And until it comes to a point in time where you actually want to urbanize it and buy the property of the people that are using it for agricultural reasons, you can't go in and change somebody's title on their deed and say, okay, you bought this property 10 years ago for whatever you wanted to raise on it, and now the city's moving in on you. You can't do that anymore. Well, that's taking if you do that. The U.S. Constitution and the California Constitution both demand due process for affecting someone's property rights. Now, the setbacks, I was glad to hear they're doing some changes on the setbacks on that, but the fact is any setback number would be arbitrary. If you give me a 10-foot setback on an acre of land and I'm in the middle of 120 acres of almonds, why? There's no reason for that. If I'm in a residential area with a lot of tight housing, there might be a reason for some setbacks, but to just make it an arbitrary countywide, this is it. It's not thoughtful. It's very capricious. So the change in the section 21.80.020 that disallows continuing existing enterprises for personal use is taking. And it's a violation of U.S. Title VII, Section 601, that forbids restricting the raising of a commodity for personal use. Governor Duke Machen signed Executive Order D-7889-1B that defines taking. And the Supreme Court has weighed in on Stop the Beach Renourishment versus Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And the court said, if legislature or court declares that what was once an established right of private property no longer exists, it has taken that property, no less than if the state had physically appropriated it or destroyed its value by regulation. Yet here we are, we're seriously considering having a single county employee act in contradiction to the county's right to farm ordinance, civil codes of California, Constitution of California and the USA, thereby setting the county up for civil rights violations lawsuits and claims for taking. The cover story of this is proposed amendment is to correct potential nuisances, and the real question is whether Stanislaus County will be faithful to the Constitution of the Republic or we'll be governed like a banana republic. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Nope. You don't get a second shot, unfortunately. No. Appreciate it. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing nothing else, I'm going to bring it back to the board. Any other comments? Supervisor Monteith?
Is that under the city's determination or the county's determination on this issue?
This would only apply to those urban transition areas within the sphere of influence, and that's the county's determination. It's the county regulations
it's not
that apply.
The city. They can extend out as far as they wish, though. They're the only ones who really can expand the city.
Correct, and the restriction that the county has does not go with the sphere of influence. It is with the urban transition designation, and the county has not been redesignating new land urban transition. So even if the city extends the sphere, these restrictions to urban transition will not extend with those spheres.
Okay, so it's still under the influence of the county?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I can understand some people's concerns here, but one thing that we're trying to do is one gentleman spoke that he moved out in an area and bought some property a number of years ago, and then as time, the growth of the population basically moved in and changed some of the requirements. I really think what we're trying to do is to eliminate that type of thing and actually clarify interpretation so that we can help prevent things like that happening. Now, there's got to be a starting point someplace, and so I really think we're trying to address and get away from the confusion that we have. But there has to be a starting place, and I think this is what we're trying to do, is set up that arrangement so that everyone's on the same page, because I think that's part of the problem we're having. I feel the same way sometimes if I agree to something and they change the rules. Well, as the population grows, I think at this point is a good time for us to set up and eliminate the confusion by setting up some of the rules and regulations by which we can prevent this from happening again. That's the way I see it. If I'm wrong, I'd like to hear. Is that basically what you're trying to do?
No, you're correct. We are simply trying to clarify some language that's been a little bit ambiguous, that has as staff transitions, is not always interpreted the same way. But it already exists. There's no new regulations. This is just clearing up to conform with the county's historical interpretation that in these limited applications, you cannot have roosters and other animals that have nuisance type tenants.
So we come to an agreement as how we should handle the situation and eliminate the confusion. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Supervisor Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Angela, I think you just stated what I was going to state, but I'd like to really simply state what I think we're doing, and if you could either confirm that that's correct or correct me if I'm not correct, because it sounds like there's a significant amount of misinformation as to what we're being asked to support this evening. So my understanding is that the only change being made is to eliminate a current setback requirement. That's the only change being made tonight. Everything else is simply clarifying what has existed since 1951 when this ordinance was first drafted. So since 1951, nobody in either of these zones has been able to have a rooster on their property. The problem being that ordinance in 1951 used the word any instead of zero, mm-hmm. or what have you. So am I correct in stating the only change being made tonight is to loosen the ordinance to eliminate one of the setback requirements? Everything else is clarifying the law that has been in place since 1951.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Other comments?
I would just like to reinforce just what Kristen said and what Dick said. And I think that you said what we're really just trying to do is codify something that was kind of left up for interpretation in the past. And so as staff came and went, This was very fluid, and so all this does is clarify all that and make it so there is no interpretation as people come and go. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
And the A2 zoning, they'll still be able to have roosters, the way I understand. That's not going to change at all.
If they're outside of those urban transition areas, they can have as many roosters as they want.
I suppose somebody has, you know, 30 or 40 roosters in this this zone. They will have, the way I understand it, 6 months or so to find another home for them.
Correct.
And if they need an extension for that, they can apply for one?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to ask CEO to comment on this.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairman. And Angela, thank you for your presentation. I do want to comment for just a moment based on something that we heard here from Supervisor Olson. She's correct in the interpretation that the rules that we are clarifying tonight have been in place since 1951. The county needs to acknowledge that there was a period of time in which, when this enforcement activity of code enforcement has been changed from department to department, that at some point one of our staff interpreted this differently than it had been historically interpreted since 1951, thus creating this dilemma, which brought it forward to say, no, that language needs to be correct. One of the things I want to point out from your presentation earlier is that had that interpretation stood, and had we decided to switch the interpretation that had been in place since 1951, that meant that these limited number of parcels that we're referring to tonight would have had the ability to have an unlimited number of roosters. However, they would have been limited to 12 chickens on their property, which is clearly was not the intent of the original ordinance. So I just want to clarify for the public who's watching tonight and for those who have joined us this evening for this hearing that this was our responsibility, that we as an organization changed our interpretation, not intentionally, but unintentionally over time, and that we knew that if one person over time could have read it differently, that we had an obligation to come back and clarify it with this Board of Supervisors, what it should have been going forward to prevent any further interpretation differences in the future. And that was the true purpose of bringing this item forward. It was definitely not intended to bring forward any new restrictions at all, but to merely clarify what has been in place since 1951 and to ensure that a single county employee couldn't come in and change the interpretation just based on their own individual standard. And I also want to acknowledge that we have loosened the restriction through this process by eliminating that one setback requirement that was discussed. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I can tell you that the things that get this board probably the most disorganized are land use issues. And taking away people's rights, I think we always hold that very high. I would tell you, though, that I agree with Supervisor Olson and the CEO's comments that this is redoing what is an interpretation, redoing because of this other issue, an ancillary issue that was an interpretation. This was the original intent. I think we're strengthening the original intent, and so I'm okay with it generally, but understand that we hold any land use issue in high regard. I think that we it sounds like we're kind of leaning the same way, but this is a clarification. So with that, if there's no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
I will go ahead and make a motion to accept all six staff recommendations.
We have a motion. We have a second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going backwards. We're going to handle item B10, which is the approval to initiate the Turlock Library Expansion Project and the issue a request for qualifications and proposals for design and planning services. Chief Executive Officer Patty Hill Thomas presenting. Welcome, Patty.
Thank Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Do you want to wait for a moment till the room clears?
Okay. Maybe give it 10 seconds.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doering. If Chairman Chiesa were sitting in my chair, he would say, it's about time that we bring to your board a plan to initiate the Turlock Library Expansion Project. So we are thrilled to be here today and to be talking about a project that is so embraced by the community of Turlock, the city of Turlock, the Friends of the Library of Turlock, and others who want to be our partner and who want to make a difference. So I'm Patricia Hill Thomas. I'm the county's chief operations officer and have had the pleasure for a while now to be part of bringing forward a strategy to initiate and then launch the expansion of the Turlock Library, a long-standing goal in our library strategic plans, in our capital improvement plan, in our capital improvement work plan, and we're glad to be here tonight. I want to recognize a couple of individuals who are here and will also be speaking. To my left is our wonderful county librarian, Diane McDonald. To Diane's left is Tim Fedorchik from Capital Projects. Key members not at the table because we couldn't all fit, but we're in the room, include Brian Sontag from the library, Mr. Keith Boggs from the Chief Executive Office, Mr. Patrick Cavanaugh from the Chief Executive Office, Mr. Jason Roberts, who, by the way, tonight, thank you for authorizing him to also be our new 10th Street Place facility manager. Jason, wave back there somewhere. Where are you? Where are you? Back there. Thank you for that. Pat Portwood, and I'm sure other members of the Turlock Friends of the Library who will also be joining in the presentation tonight, and Mr. David Crotty, who you know from before with our Public Safety Center work. I'd like to thank the board for your patience with us. I'd like to thank the board's Capital Facilities Committee, chaired by Supervisor Dick Monteith and joined this year by Supervisor Kristen Olson, for spending a good deal of time with us on the details about how to initiate and launch an expansion in the community of Turlock. We are excited to work with folks that want to partner with us and make a difference. I'm into this three-word question now. When we talk to you about the Access Center, we will use those three same words. We ask the community who partners with us, are we in? And the answer with the Turlock community, through three fabulous Saturday and night meetings with the community, just to get to this starting point, is we are in. And I hope you'll see tonight in our presentation the kind of collaborative approach that will make a capital facility like this just go like clockwork. Supervisor Chiesa hosted the first meeting, and he waited a long time for us to catch up with him. So thank you, Chairman Chiesa, very much for your patience with us. We hired the firm of HOK Architects because they're really good at building community collaboration and listening to people's wants, needs, and desires and interpreting it into a vision for something that's doable and sustainable. So David will be speaking to you a little bit about that tonight. And we went back with the Friends of the Library and the community, and they are in and support this effort tonight, along with our partners at the City of Turlock. So I'm smiling because this is a great way to launch an effort. Just by way of a little bit of background, since 1967, we've had a Turlock Library on Minaret Avenue, just east of downtown Turlock. It's about 10,000 square foot. It's on one of the nicest tree-shaded park-like locations of all of our county facilities. It's a gem, it's beautiful. And Diane will speak to you in a moment about how well regarded and respected the Turlock Library is in the systems of libraries. A picture here is in color. It's a beautiful location. And it's a library location, and it's joined on the block by a senior citizen center. And there's no better place. We don't want to overcomplicate this. We want to expand the Turlock Library right where it is and take advantage of this beautiful location, the existing square footage that would likely be remodeled in a second phase, and make better what's already really wonderful there. But quite frankly, we've really outgrown, and we really need to modernize the center. So with that overview, and I'm going to come back in a little bit, I would be happy to turn this over to our wonderful county librarian.
Thank you, Patty. Good evening, members of the board. As Patty mentioned, an expansion of the Turlock Library is much needed and has been a goal for many, many years. The current Turlock Library building was completed in 1967, and it was designed to serve a population of 36,000. And it's approximately 10,000 square feet. Today, the population of Turlock has grown to over 70,000. And the Turlock Library is one of the county's most popularly used facilities and the second busiest in our library system. Last year, 342,000 people passed through library doors at Turlock, and 232,500 items were checked out. The current library is significantly undersized for this level of population and usage. An expansion is needed to accommodate the services and volumes of customers today and into the future. For example, children's services at the Turlock Library are extremely popular, but the existing space limits staff ability to offer additional programs and teen and adult services. There's currently no community room at the Turlock Library, and community meeting space is very minimal there. And innovative technology requires additional space. Wi-Fi, for example, is a popular service. And with the increased use of personal devices that folks bring in to use the Wi-Fi, they need more outlets. And going back to teen space, we don't have any dedicated teen space right now at the Turlock Library, and this is a very important service for us. So as the library use has continued to evolve, these changes directly impact our facilities needs, and we truly need a larger library. So thank you. And now I think we'll turn it over to David.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and everyone, Mr. David Crotty from HOK Architecture, who worked with us in the community to create a vision. David, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you tonight. I'm here to basically say, to explain what we did in a visioning session that we did with the community of Turlock. The purpose of the visioning session really was twofold. One was to understand the general vision for the library and a potential expansion to the library. And secondarily, it was to understand what components might go into that or a concept program. Next slide, please. So we had about 50 participants who joined us in this visioning session, and they were comprised of county representatives, friends of the library, interested community members, and it comprised about 50 different people. So it was a really nice cross-section of people who were interested in the library. The first part was the visioning session. And essentially what a visioning session is it allows people to create a short, clear statement about the objectives or aspirations of what the project, what the library expansion might be. So we, in order to do that, what we did is we broke out into about five different groups, about five different topics. And the topics were determined by HOK. We talked with the library folks, we talked with the county people, and we collectively developed five general concepts that we divided folks into. So once they were in their five different groups, one of the groups was technology. We asked each of these different groups to create a vision statement about what the library could be and about how it might apply to technology. You'll see in this image here, on the left-hand side is a board, and this board just gives some kind of different ideas that people can think about, kind of outside of the box general thinking. And it's meant to encourage thought among the participants. And on the right-hand side, and kind of throughout this presentation, you'll see different concepts that the community members came up with. And at the end of it, they came up with a group vision statement. So I'm going to read each of the vision statements from the five different groups. Technology, their vision statement was a destination for educational, cultural, and entertainment resources for the 21st century and beyond. And then this is just more of the notes from the technology folks. And maybe I should step back one moment and say that the presentation you're seeing here is an excerpt from a document that we produced, essentially documenting the entire process. So it's available. The next group, adult services, turned out to be a popular group, a popular topic. There was actually two different groups. So many people wanted to participate in the adult services portion that we had to break it down into two separate groups. This particular group, their vision statement was a place to connect with your community and the world. And then adult services group B, they came up with a library that meets the information needs of our diverse community. And you can imagine all the different conversation that they use in order to come to that simple sentence. And it took, you know, probably 2 hours for each of these groups to actually get to their point, to their sentence. Then we had services create for creativity, and their statement was community resource with access, equality, and literacy for all. And then teen services was another one of our groups. And their statement was, engage teens to become lifelong library supporters. And then again, you can see their notes along the way. And then our last group was children's services. And now you get a sense of how the different groups are broken up, you know, kind of into the teen, children, and adult services. And the group vision statement for the children's services was an educational oasis for children of all ages to grow, learn, create, and prosper. And after this point, what we did is all of the different groups got together and we talked together as a big room. And we tried to come up with one singular vision statement for the entire group. And if you look through this, you can see really the effort and the energy and the thought that went into create this. And we really wordsmithed this. And you know, on the right-hand side, you can kind of see this is just the iterations that we went through. You can see a place to connect with your community and the world. And then that developed into a place to connect with our community in the world. And so we really thought about every single word that was involved in this. And I can tell you the enthusiasm in the room was palpable. Sometimes when we go to these things, we really have to pull people out. But in this case, we were in no shortage for opinions or ideas. The community really loved this. And so the final vision statement that we all came up with was connecting us with our community and the world. And this was a nice way really to bring together all these different vision statements that we had. And so with this, once we have a final vision statement, it really opens us up to, okay, what direction do we want to take with this library? What are the important things that we can develop? So following this, we start to talk about what are the things, the must-haves that the library must have. So we went through the different components of must-haves, and it included things that you would probably imagine. You know, it had a computer lab area, it had bathrooms, it had family space, it had, you know, dedicated space outside. So people were brainstorming, and this was the list of must-haves that the library developed, that the group developed. We also had a kind of a step down from that as a nice-to-have. What are elements that would be important but not essential to the library? And so they had ideas like, you know, a sustainable building, or it should have a mezzanine space or a drop-off space for the building. And then the next category from there was future growth. And this is just thinking about, well, self-explanatory, thinking about what might happen in the future. And some of the ideas were, you know, develop more property, shell out some of this for future expansion, have elevators for the general public. And then we have other thoughts and exterior program. But the point of this portion of the session was really to find out what are the elements that make up this library. What are the things that are important to the community, to the library users, to the people who run the library, and to the county. And from that, we developed a concept program. And so as an architect, we divide things into these usable spaces. And in this, we have kind of these general categories. We have the public space, we have the administration space, and then there's always a grossing factor. And this is for things like, you know, mechanical spaces and walls. And in any event, we came up with 12,081 square feet. It is a concept program, so the 12,081 might seem really specific, but it's generally in the 12,000 square foot ballpark. And then now the next pages, they start to give you a little bit more detail as to what comprises those elements of the 12,000 square feet. And this is how we ended it with, you know, kind of coming to a consensus of the program. We came back and we confirmed it with the users and confirmed the document that we just presented with you this evening. And I can say everyone seemed very excited. And as Patricia started with the "Are you in?" question, that question, we didn't even have to ask it. People were shouting, "We are in." Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, David. This visioning process is really the start of those key factors and steps in capital projects to go from a dream or a vision to the reality. And as the board knows, it is our practice to be working directly with you every major step of the way. So we focus on quality, on cost, and on time, all key factors in the successful delivery of capital projects. We don't talk a lot about money at this stage because we're at the vision stage, but we've retained the services of cost estimator. We have some sense, and we also have some fiscal ability to absorb the cost of the Turlock Library. So when we come back to you, if you choose to approve this plan tonight, we'll bring back that financial plan, that design plan, and a schedule and steps to move forward. It is really my pleasure to have gotten to know Pat Portwood from the Friends of the Turlock Library, who is an incredible champion. I see other members of the Turlock Friends of the Library in the audience. And with your approval, I'd love to turn this over to Pat. Good evening, Pat.
All right. Good evening, Patricia. Thank you so much for this opportunity and to the Board of Supervisors. It is, yes, I am honored to represent the Friends of the Turlock Public Library. There's many more of us, but, and yes, we are definitely in. All right. There's no doubt about it. It's true that the 1968 Turlock Library, notice how I reference to it, is in dire need of a new library, and it has been for many years. Guess what I found? I have the dedication program from 1968. When Turlock, and it looks just like the picture you put up there, nothing's changed. When Turlock had a population of approximately 30,000, and I was actually graduating from college at USC. But this has to be many moons ago, okay? So the seating capacity for children was 36, and we now have over 100 children that attend our story times at any one given time. And the book capacity was 50,000. We currently, it surpasses 90,000. And of course, now our population, as Diane stated, it's over 71,000. So I just want to say thank you to the Board of Supervisors, Patricia Hill, Thomas, Keith Boggs, Diane McDonald, and many others from the county for listening. Okay, and responding to the needs of the Turlock citizens. The Friends have shown patience. This has been a long time. Perseverance. We kept calling and kept meeting and kept saying, come on. And determination in this process. And I am proud to be a member. So now this dream is becoming a reality. And the Friends, I would like to share with you, have raised nearly $80,000 towards this dream. What this represents is not the money aspect, I mean, we know, but it's the commitment factor, the belief that libraries are so important to our communities. So we will be there along the way, continuing to support in every way possible, ready to cut the ribbon, can't wait for that. Of course, we also know, dependent upon November election, that's all I'll say there, but if you believe, as I do, that this is a magical moment, this is a celebration. I think we should clap our hands for the board and for everyone. So I thank you very much. Thank you.
It is our honor tonight to present one recommendation to authorize us to initiate this expansion project, to issue the request for qualifications and proposals for design and planning services, which will return back to your board for approval along with the financial plan to really get this going, as Ms. Portwood said. So we would be happy, all of us, to answer any questions you may have about this idea of expanding the Turlock Library. Thank you.
Any questions, Supervisor Monteith?
I was just curious, that entitled, that in involves the two blocks. There's two blocks in there. The old ground where the Lowell Grammar School used to be were two blocks, and that's what that includes, correct?
And we have a site map. I got so excited, I think I skipped over it. Tim, can you pull up that slide 29, please?
You're talking about the Catholic school?
No.
No.
No, this, no, see this, this, okay, this shows us one, and I don't know where it is now, but there used to be a road about a third away from the left. And, okay. So that's basically those two solid blocks right in there that were together, basically.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify
it is one block.
One block now.
The Turlock has their, I can't even think what it's called now. It's right across Cooper Street.
It's
right?
The senior citizens.
Across the street of Sacred Heart and
right, very close to Sacred Heart. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I got the streets wrong.
I just want to clarify that was that whole area because that was all in one piece. Although there was a road that it ran in between. I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah.
So that includes both those sections.
Right.
Only the first, not the second.
It's one entire block, but it is two parcels. Roughly half the block is the county's property with the Turlock Library on it. The other half is the city of Turlock's property with the Turlock Senior Center. And kind of crossing that parcel line is a shared parking lot that serves both those facilities.
Okay. So you're talking about the first partial. In the city is a separate part.
Right. And okay. On this diagram, it's the space that's shaded green in the background is the county's portion of that block.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify because I know there was that split.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Any other questions of staff? If not, anyone else like to comment on this item? Okay. Well, this is for myself personally, as Patricia Hill talked about. This is as exciting as can be. I think the Rennings, who aren't here tonight, but the Rennings had a meeting with me about 8 years ago and said it's time to get on the library. And I did the same thing. I preached patience. We just paid off the Nick Blom Library in Salida, which is another crown jewel of the library system. And so this was the time. This is the appropriate time to go towards the expansion. I don't see this as being too late. I think I made three promises so far as a supervisor. One was to pave Berkeley Road, that little section between Taylor and Keys, for which I'll forever be known. The second was to try and fix negative bailout. And the third was that we were going to fix this library and get this done right. I like the visioning process. David, is David still here? There he is. He's in the back. Most of the time we build to budget. And we haven't done that. Doesn't mean that we don't have to stay within our budget, but we've visioned this, asked the community, and it's amazing on Measure L how successful we were by asking the community what they wanted to see in roads. And now we're asking the city of Turlock what they want to see for their library. This is, it's not just Turlock, but it's a community library. And I love it, and then we'll work backwards. And if we have to part down a little bit, we will. But it is going to be a great vision. Pat, if I could bottle up a little bit of your enthusiasm, just a little bit. I love it. You've been a strong supporter of the library system for a long time. I appreciate everything you do. The Friends of the Library, I cannot believe you've raised $80,000. And it's 25 cents at a time, just about, on used book sales and in reality. I know the Ferrari family made quite a substantial donation. So really exciting times where I have a good feeling about this going forward. And then we also have a great expansion in Empire that we're looking at. So
that's nice.
With that.
I'll echo Supervisor Chiesa's remarks. And yes, I'm excited for the visioning process in Empire as well, and we're moving along. But I wanted to, first of all, congratulate staff on your leadership on this project. It's been a job very well done. And mostly, I wanted to congratulate the Friends of the Library. I said in our Capital Facilities Committee hearing years ago when I was in administration at CSU Stanislaus, the Friends of the Library, I had to have a few meetings with them about something. I don't even remember what it was. But what I do remember is you were the most active, enthusiastic group I think I had ever met with to date and have ever met with since.
And patient.
So, and patient and persevering. And the list goes on. So congratulations on everything that you guys have accomplished. Yeah, kudos to all of you. $80,000, as was said, that's a lot of money for a Friends of the Library group. And that's something you should be very, very proud of. It will be a legacy that lasts for many, many generations in Stanislaus County. And then finally, I wanted to say last week, I think it was last weekend, I was in Washington, D.C. One of the people that was there with me was the mayor of Spokane. And he was talking about all the stuff they're doing in their library systems. Very innovative, interesting stuff. So you might take a look at some of the stuff that they're doing in Spokane and see if we can implement some of that here. And some of it I know we're already doing, because Diane, you've talked about the maker space and things like that. So excited to see this project coming to fruition, and I'll be excited to be at the groundbreaking.
I'm just going to wrap this up kind of with kudos for Vito for all. I think since I started here 7 years ago, I think I've heard about this library from Vito, and I know he's been working on this, and again, he's been very patient, and everybody kind of waits their turn for their time to come up for their district, for things to work in their district, and I know he's bowed several times to other districts and other projects in other districts, but never let this go. So I just want to, you know, thank Vito for all he's done for District 2 and making this happen.
Thank you. Okay, nothing else. I'll make the motion to approve all staff recommendations.
You made it.
Yeah, I did.
I'll second it.
We have a second. First and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Yay. There's the movement. Another step. Baby step.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Patricia Hill. You're wonderful. Tim, Dan. Okay, on to item C3, approval, consider adoption resolution of necessity to acquire a real property interest through eminent domain, Clarabelle and Roselle Avenue intersection. This will require a 4/5 vote to pass. Matt Machado presenting.
All right, good evening, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doring. Again, Matt Machado, Director of Public Works. And item before you, as the Chairman mentioned, this is a consideration of a resolution of necessity to acquire real property or interest in real property by eminent domain for the Clarabelle Road at Roselle Avenue intersection road widening project. The parcel owners are Joe Dutra and Jill Dutra, APN number 075-025-011. I'll start with a brief project status. The project completed environmental phase about a year and a half ago. The design was completed just this past summer. And the right-of-way needs are about four parcels needed. Two of them have been secured, and two remain needed. The one before you is one of those needed. And so the project has been long in the planning. The need is great. We get complaints on this intersection probably almost daily. It does feel that way. I think we got one today, didn't we? So it's ongoing. The subject parcel, we have been in discussions, negotiations for about 7 months. Our most recent reasonable offer was in July. And we're still in negotiations, and that is unfortunate. And it's not, I don't have much pleasure bringing these type of items to you, but it's necessary. And so Public Works staff does recommend initiating the process of acquiring the right-of-way from the owner through the eminent domain process. Starting the eminent domain process now allows the county to obtain an order of possession while the right-of-way acquisition compensation is negotiated. I will share a bit more about the status. The necessity today, is what's driving us, is we need to get the right-of-way acquired so that utility relocation can begin, so that we can be in a position of construction in the spring. And so all this timing goes hand in hand, and so we are on a very tight schedule today to be ready for construction in the spring or summer of next year. This eminent domain process does require, well, requires your authorization, and you must first adopt a resolution of necessity required by section 1245.220 of the Code of Civil Procedure. The purpose of the resolution of necessity hearing, which is tonight, is to provide the owners of the property the opportunity to comment on what we have drafted as staff recommendations. And so I'm going to list those staff recommendations, and then I'll turn it to the board for comments and questions. There are 6 staff recommendations. They are: find that the public interest and necessity require the Clairwell Road at Roselle Avenue intersection road widening project. Find that the project is planned or located in the manner that will be most compatible with the greatest public good and the least private injury. Find that the subject property, APN 075-025-011, described in the attached resolution, is necessary for the project. Find that the offer required by section 7267.2 of the government code has been made to the parcel owners, Joe Dutra and Jill Dutra, of the property to be acquired. Adopt a resolution of necessity in the form attached hereto as attachment 1, and authorize county council to initiate eminent domain proceedings to acquire the subject property. With that, I will turn it to your board for any comments or questions.
Okay. Any questions of Matt?
I'll just briefly make a comment. I want to thank you for continuing to push this project along. I know it's been a long time coming, and as you mentioned, regular complaints. Once this project is complete, we will literally help every person who lives in the city of Riverbank and tens of thousands of people who live in East Modesto. So it's a really important project, and we're excited that it's sooner rather than later to completion now. So good work.
Thank you.
And I want to point out again, this is 0.71 acres permanent easement, 0.2 acres on a temporary easement, of which you can come back. And you have the offers in here. And I always like to just, I think it's fair. $81,200 is what was offered. And now we're up to 153, right?
That is correct.
$153,000 for 0.71 acres. So I guess I can look. Are there any comments from the public? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to Jim. Did you have a question? I'm sorry.
I don't think there's any doubt that there's a need for this property. The only question apparently is just how much we're going to have to pay for it. And who's going to determine that if we're at a stalemate? Does it go to court?
Yes, yeah. So it would be a court decision at some point if we cannot come to some terms in the meantime.
Okay, that's what I thought. We very rarely have eminent domain. I mean, it's... The last one I can remember was Supervisor Mayfield. We took part of his property because he couldn't make a contract with the county, so he had to take it by eminent domain. But anyway, this parcel is needed. I don't think there's any dispute, actually. I think it's a pretty generous offer. I got some almond orchards, too, if you want to give me $150,000 an acre for it. I'd be very acceptable for that. Anyway, I'm going to support this. It's in the public interest to get this project moved along. Sorry we couldn't reach a decision on or at least an agreement on what we're going to pay for it, but I think the county's been fair and acted in good faith, and we just have to go forward with the project. Even as much as I hate having to go to eminent domain, we just have no choice.
Okay, so I'm going to look for a motion to adopt the 6, plus the one of those is to adopt the resolution of necessity in the form. Is there a motion? Move to approve.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you much. We have nothing from County Council. We're going to move on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Ceres Unified School District regarding the adoption of alternative school facility fees on new residential development within their district.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a copy of the 2017 Crow's Landing Naval Base Easement Annual Reserve Monitoring Report from the West Stanislaus Resource Conservation District.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office of Environmental Resources.
This board has received resolutions from Shiloh Elementary School District, Valley Home Joint School District, Sylvan Union School District, requesting the change of their governing board member elections from odd number to even numbered years.
Refer to the clerk, recorder, and registrar of voters.
This board has received 2 notices from the California Water Boards regarding the opportunity to comment regarding amendments to the water quality control plan for the Sacramento River and San Joaquin River basins for the control of pyrethroid pesticide discharges and to add electrical conductivity water quality objectives in the San Joaquin River between the mouth of the Merced River and the Airport Way Bridge.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from the Office of the County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters inviting a member of the Board of Supervisors to participate on the Election Observer Panel for the Consolidated District Election on Tuesday, November 7th, 2017.
Okay, we're going to do that right now. We're going to designate. And Supervisor DeMartini has always been willing to do it. Are you willing to do it again?
I would be happy to do it unless somebody else wants to really do it.
You see everyone looking down? So we're going to designate Supervisor DeMartini.
I think it's important that the board overlooks the election just to be sure everything's okay. I've never seen a problem in the past, but I just feel better being there watching. So I'd be happy to do it.
Thank you very much for serving. So we designate it, all right, on item six.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims or refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? It's a real bummer. My son, Teo, comes in here for punishment all the time. I'm actually, we're trying to figure out why he's here today. That's it. Thanks for coming, Buck. Legislative Fiscal Management Report, CEO. Ace.
Yes, just a brief report, and Teo is here for this report. This is why he came in tonight. Just to give you a very brief recap of the 2017 legislative session, many bills have been signed or vetoed since the last time this board met. The governor received 859 bills on his desk this year, vetoing just under 14% of those, but 741 were signed. Some of the major issues that went through there, and I know most of you have already heard this, regards transportation, cap and trade, housing bonds. I do want to mention cannabis, just a few hot topics. Cannabis regulation, there were a host of regulations that are still pending, creating final rulemaking by the state that is anticipated to be in place prior to January of 2018, but we wouldn't be surprised if we see some emergency regulations issued later this fall to deal with all of those issues that local governments are struggling with related to the implementation of legalized cannabis. SB 649 was vetoed by the governor just this last week. That was the wireless telecommunications bill. This bill did not necessarily have a direct fiscal impact to the county, but definitely had impacts on local control and was of close concern for counties and cities especially. So we'll see if that surfaces again next year, along with AB 1250, which this board weighed in on, along with most other counties and even some cities, relating to contracting services in county government. That bill is pending and is held over till next fiscal cycle, so or legislative cycle. So we will see what that comes back, but we would expect it to return, and we would expect to have to resume our advocacy on that bill next year. Just wanted to mention the big ticket items at the end of this legislative session were in the area of housing. Legislature approved a package to create new affordable housing and streamline permitting for housing projects. This has the potential for significant impact to not just Stanislaus County, but all other communities in California. The governor signed 15 different housing-related bills. SB 2 and SB 3 were the most prominent of those. SB 2 is the Building Homes and Jobs Act, which adds a fee on real estate transaction documents intended to generate about $250 million per year to be split amongst state and local housing programs. SB 3 is the Veterans and Affordable Housing Bond Act of 2018. That was signed just a couple of weeks ago, which authorizes $4 billion in a general obligation bond for affordable housing and veterans home ownership program. This must be voted on by next November. And then skipping down to transportation, all of you are aware of SB 1 with the gas tax that is commonly referred to as. This is subject to future challenge, but everyone needs to note that there's significant issues for local governments, including the county. We very much rely on the resources that were brought to us by SB 1, so we'll have to closely watch where that goes. And AB 758, something we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, establishes the Tri-Valley San Joaquin Valley Regional Rail Authority to develop more cooperation amongst all of the agencies involved in the planning and development of the transit connection between BART and the ACE train. Which we definitely should benefit from. And of last note is the SB 54 regarding immigration, signed by the governor on October 5th. at the protest of most public safety departments. This bill prohibits state and local law enforcement agencies, including school, police, and security departments, from using money or personnel to investigate, interrogate, detain, detect, or arrest persons for immigration enforcement purposes under a specific number of law violations. So that is an issue that we will monitor closely to see how that impacts our local public safety system as well. And that's my quick update.
That was an excellent. I think that was your first update. I think we've been putting it off. Oh, this is your second one? I wasn't at that meeting. All right. If there's nothing else for the good of the order, this meeting's adjourned.